Now, what are your, since we're on this, I'll continue this trend for a moment.
Okay.
Carry optics, limited optics. What are your thoughts on dropping carry optics to 15 and then let limited optics be what carry optics was with all the additional stuff?
That would be interesting. I mean, having like production optics, and then like limited optics. Yeah, that seems reasonable. I just want to shoot. I mean, those details to me, I like what Max is doing with PCSL and having, I think it's a 21 or 22 round limit, in that I see people wasting so much time on magazines, and you're kind of encouraged to by the rule set.
You are.
Yeah, there's one classifier, I think Trigger Freeze, that's 24 rounds. And if you can get 24 rounds in your gun or 24 plus one, that is such an advantage.
Yep.
And I've shot some carry optics matches, and being able to do 24 plus one is a big advantage. It's a big advantage in that, like, I can get to the last position. I have a mini popper at 20 yards, but I have two extra rounds. That's like, I'm not going to reload for that. If I was coming in and I had a mini popper at 20 yards and I had no extra rounds, like I was going to go to slide lock, it's like, yeah, you better believe I'm going to stick a reload before coming in on that.
Yeah, the strategy changes.
The strategy changes. Having everybody shoot 21 or 22, I think that's a nice compromise. Of course, the people who make, who are 3D printing fancy followers wouldn't like that, but
right.
You're not going to make everybody happy.
No, you're not. Something's going to have to change because you're not going to be able to keep CO and limited opt. I mean, maybe you could keep them the way they are, but it's almost the exact same division, just with a couple of minor changes. So
yeah, there's not a
clear delineation.
It's almost a distinction without a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Same exact guns, everything.
Yeah, I mean, you do have 2011s, so you can do cocked and locked and limited optics. And I do think there should be a home for those. I just see so many of them. I mean, I have police officers come into my classes with Staccatos.
Are those issued or personal?
They're personal. The department has authorized them. And given, like, with the, from what I'm told, if you're active duty police, you want a Staccato, there, it's not going to be that crazy expensive.
Well, and I know there are departments that are issuing them. That's why I asked.
I've heard that too. Yeah. Around Atlanta, they're authorized. I'm not aware of any that are issuing yet.
So all of you guys around Atlanta, make it up to GM. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, so right around between 2017, you made GM.
Yeah.
And then it seems like right around 2020, you kind of started really hitting your stride with shooting and started the teaching. That's when you did your first PSTG summit.
Yeah.
And then 2022, you started winning majors.
What I'll say on the winning the majors is that CO drew away enough of the heat from production that I was able to win. Like, I got a little bit better, but like, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I got, like, you look around Atlanta, we've got, in terms of production, we have Tyler Turner and we have Sal Luna. And there is no way I can beat either of those guys shooting production. But they decided to shoot carry optics at the Georgia State match, so I was able to win. And that's what I tell people. It's like, if the really good shooters are away for the weekend, I can get a match win.
So the improvement between 2017 and 2020, what were you doing in there? Even though you had made GM, what were you doing to improve your skills even more?
So one of the things that happened in there is that we had been living in an 800 square foot condominium. So I was dry firing in the bedroom, kind of going around the bed. And this is, like, you can imagine, it's 800 square foot condominium. So the bedroom is not very big. And we had the targets around the bedroom that I kept up. And when we moved to a house, I turned the basement into a gym dry fire area. So it's not a big basement, but I put down like gym flooring, like the interlocking rubber tiles. And I put a Dillon 1050 in there. And I hung, or put dry fire targets all over the walls. And when we moved, we had all these boxes, like these big boxes. So I was able to cut those up and make vision barriers. So just in terms of my ability to train was so much better. So I just, the ability to dry fire was so much better, or got so much better there. And then I, with Ben, I've been bringing Ben to Atlanta every year since that first class. So like every year I'm getting a tune up with him. And then, I also got some classes with, JJ and Travis Tomasi. And those both helped tremendously. And then also talked with Ron Avery a bunch. I got some coaching from him.
And that's where I wanted to go next, was with those classes.
Yeah.
I know with you've been doing it with Ben since 2014, but what can you tell me about the JJ and Travis? Like, what was it about their classes that helped you?
They both have a different approach to shooting. I would say with JJ, what really helped from him is his conceptualization on trigger prep, of having the, he breaks it out with attack and control targets. And on the attack targets, your priority is speed, and you're just running through the trigger. And on the control targets, you are, as you come onto the target, you're prepping the trigger up to the break point, to the wall. And then you're waiting. He has a saying, trigger before sights. So you want the trigger prepped before you even worry about the sights, and that they're giving you the permission to fire. And that helped me a lot. Like I'm not a physically gifted person. Like I'm not that dexterous or coordinated or any of those things. And
so you're not athletically gifted.
No.
Okay.
I have like, I'm very stubborn, and I have like, I can stick to things. I have good endurance, but yeah, like the athletic hand-eye coordination is just all like subpar. And kind of JJ, like that from JJ, just really helped me a lot on being able to pick up my accuracy and pick up some speed as well. That helped a lot. Also just the way JJ conceptualizes moving, I think is very good. Like he's, he can explain in a lot of detail how he moves through a stage and what his planning strategy is, like how he's planning his footwork. And that, hearing that from him and incorporating that in my visualization helped a lot. Instead of just thinking, go to a spot, he's really like, how do you want to be standing when you're in that spot? Like, how do you stand so that you can shoot sooner? How do you stand so that you can exit sooner? With Travis, his description of visualization and learning is just, I probably took a dozen pages of notes on my iPad when I took the class with Travis. I mean, we got to the range, and it was an hour before we could start shooting. And he just started hitting on visualization. And I mean, my fingers were just tired from all the typing as he was talking. I mean, it was just getting this, like it's not everything he knows, but he was just, like no fluff, like everything is just solid, actionable information on visualization, how it works. He was also big on, some shooters will say that they want to shoot a stage totally subconsciously and just be an observer as they're shooting. And Travis was the first person I've heard really talk about, that's great, but it's not always going to be possible. And there are sections of stage where you want your conscious mind to be engaged, and you should decide that in advance and plan on it. And that helped me a lot. Eric talks about that too. If you listen to Eric talk, or people who did the Eric class in Florida recently, they'll talk about that. But that helped me a lot. Because I've been trying to just the buzzer goes and you just start blasting, and then it's unload, show clear. And that happens. Like I'll regularly have that happen on stages that are, where the shot difficulty isn't very high and the positioning is not very tricky. But when there are stages with a tricky engagement sequences or precise foot locations or really tight shots where I want to consciously like feel my grip, feel the trigger prep before I give the okay from the sight picture, I'm 100% having my conscious mind engaged and taking care of those sections of the stage. And just hearing Travis talk about that, I was like, yeah, this is what I need to do.
I even feel like sometimes I will engage my brain and my feet to where as I come into a position, like especially on the edge of a fault line, if I need to be at a certain place on a fault line, if I'm not feeling that on my foot, then I know something's wrong. Right. But as soon as I feel that, it's like that trigger to go good. And then I can do what I need to do. So, yeah, I mean, I totally get the, there are times where you want your conscious mind engaged.
Yes. Yes.
That's interesting. Cause I mean, I've always told other people, even when I was teaching, you know, I was once asked by a guy, he's like, so what do you think makes the best instructor? And I said, oh, that's simple. I was like, it's someone who can maintain your attention the longest and get the information across the best.
Yeah.
That's the if they can hold your attention and engage you, they're going to be the best instructor for you.
And so, nonsense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, as long as their information is good, yes. You know, but that's why I always tell people, I mean, you know, take multiple classes because you're going to pick up different things from different people with the way they interact with you, and certain things are going to really attract your attention. So,
yeah. And
all three of those were something different for you.
Yes.
How much did all of that and the Georgia Tech thing help you when you first started teaching classes? Because did you have any formal class on how to teach and how to instruct?
It was not beyond, again, like at Georgia Tech, it was something we talked about a lot. Is like we had an outdoor rec coordinator who was somebody who did have an education degree, and he or she would work with us on teaching and on how to present material and pacing and such. So we got some coaching, but I wouldn't call it formal education.
Okay.
So I think the first classes that I taught, they went reasonably well. And the material I'm teaching now and how I'm teaching it is different, but they're not fundamentally different classes in the approach. That I'm trying to make it like as much experiential or inductive learning as possible. I'm trying to talk as little as possible. I want to show some demos, and I want to get the students shooting or dry firing as quickly as I can. Like I'm just trying to present like a little bit of information and then have them work on that information so it starts transferring into memory. Like I don't have any, I think the longest I ever talk, like I've started doing some video recordings of my classes to post online. And it's like the longest things are 8 to 10 minutes. And that's unusual. Like those are fairly unusual sections. Like a lot of times it's like 3 minutes, 5 minutes, just short nuggets where I'm like, this is what I'm going to tell you. And then I explain it in detail and I summarize, this is what I just told you. Here's a demo. Let's shoot.
How do you enjoy teaching?
I enjoy it a lot. I like that. There are some people that were in my early classes who are beating me at matches. Like, I think that's really cool. and yeah, I enjoy being out on the range. I enjoy seeing people get better. I like shooting a lot, and I like other people. I like seeing other people enjoy shooting. And what I find really rewarding is when people will say like, I've never thought about this and that level of detail, or I never realized I should be thinking about this, and it translates directly into them shooting a stage better or shooting a drill better. I just explain to people how I focus my attention as I'm shooting a drill, like what's important, what they should pay attention to, what they shouldn't pay attention to. And then I'm able to see them directly translate that into results. I think the whole idea, like you hear people say, well, you're not going to get better during a class. It's like, no, no, no. You should have a couple of things for most of the students that they're going to get better like right away. Like there should be measurable improvements right away. Or I've had this even with fairly advanced shooters. Like I've had police officers who are on the training detail or SWAT teams of their departments. And these guys are good. I mean, these guys are like, I'm impressed. Like they've never shot a match before, but I watch them shoot. I'm like, these guys can get at it. And then I'm able to smoke them on a stage. And then fairly quickly, I'll able to explain to them what I'm doing differently, how I'm treating things differently, how I'm being more efficient, and that they're able to just start doing that immediately. And like by the end of the day, it's like, man, I'm having to work to keep up with these guys. But that's very rewarding.
Yeah, it's very gratifying. It's like it's almost like that whole instant gratification thing, because you can see it right there. You know, it's measurable.
Yeah.
How much are you enjoying the PSTG Summit and teaching there?
Oh, that's a blast. You're just getting together a bunch of people who are really enthusiastic about shooting and training and getting better. And it's a very casual environment where people are open about what they're doing and they're there to learn. They're there to share. It's like the teaching there is a lot of fun. Cause again, you know that I think in general, in the classes I do, people are only coming to the classes if they want to be there, but that seems doubly true at the summit. Cause it's not just, hey, I'm going to do this. Like I'm going to drive an hour and spend $200 for a class for a day versus I'm going to drive a whole day. I'm renting an Airbnb. Like it's like there, that just, I think it just ramps the motivation up even more for the summit.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are people who are also subscribed to that. So, you know, these are people with a higher motivation. So yeah, they're going to go that extra step. But I'm curious because anytime I see a gathering of people like PSTG, especially on the instructor side, and the people that, you know, Joel and Ben bring in to do that, I always feel like it's the philosophical dialogue that has to occur there at the same time is pretty incredible too.
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion on how we approach teaching, how we approach shooting, how we approach matches, how we approach training, talking about different techniques. There's a lot of back and forth on that. I mean, that's something we should drop a microphone and just record. I think,
yes,
there've been some Tom
Castro. People will pay for that.
Yeah. There've been some Tom Castro things where I think he's just turned the microphone on after, like when they're shooting a big match and just recorded. Like those are interesting. They just have almost a breakout session or something.
And not only that, but Andreas, I would go as far to say that other instructors would pay to hear that recording.
Yeah.
Just to see what that group of instructors are talking about, what they're thinking and how it aligns with them, or maybe it's something they hadn't thought about and they're like, oh, damn, now I can go out on the range. Let me try something based on what they're hearing. Maybe it's a slight modification. Maybe it's exactly what they said. But now they can go out to the range and try some stuff and go, I can put that in my class.
And there's just a lot of, like, all of us are off shooting and teaching for months. And then we all come together and it's a trading of what's been working for you, what hasn't been working for you. And you're like, yeah, that hasn't been working for me either. I'm like, oh, maybe I should try that. So there's... Yeah, there are some changes that happen from that.
And the reason I say this is this, because when I was at Quantico, we had a basic course where we trained everybody to give them the MOS as a sniper in the Marine Corps. And that was very much a delineation between instructor and student. It was not a gentleman's course whatsoever. We had almost a 70% attrition rate, okay? Yeah, it's a big one. But then we also had an advanced course where you had to be a school trained sniper and you had to have experience, and they would come in and we would do advanced topics. It was a gentleman's course. Mm-hmm. So now you have all these guys throughout the Marine Corps that have this experience, and then you have the instructor staff as well. And we would always exchange ideas and pick each other's brains and talk about different things and try things. And it was, that was probably more valuable than what we actually did.
A lot of the learning comes after, like we're well into that bottle of scotch in the afternoon.
Oh, so I got to ask you, I saw that you do jiu-jitsu.
I've started. Yeah. I'm
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're new to it. I was going to say, have you tried grappling leg grease yet?
I have. Yes.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Oh, I mean, it would go exactly as you think. It's like,
he's a good guy though. I imagine it's.
It's like Lane's playing with the food. Let's be honest here. he did. I actually did a. I started the way I started jiu-jitsu was actually because of Lane, in a way, in that a shooting buddy of mine had started training jiu-jitsu at a gym that's not even 10 minutes from where I shoot, and. So he was doing that. I'm like, yeah, that sounds fun. Maybe I'll do that one of these days. And then he got Lane to come in and do a combatives class, or like a gun grappling type class. And he's like, Andreas, do you want to do this class that Lane's teaching? I'm like, oh yeah, I know Lane. This sounds great. I'll come do it. And he said, well, I mean, it would probably be a good idea if you learned a little bit of grappling before Lane showed up. I'm like, yeah, it would probably be a good idea if I learned a little bit of grappling before Lane showed up. And yeah, so that's how that got started.
I figure if I get in a grappling match with Lane, I'm bringing a baseball bat.
Oh yeah, the bat's not going to help you.
No, it's not. It's going to make it worse. Exactly. Yeah, it's going to make it worse.
Yes.
Oh goodness, I'm going to use my my long range ability on that one because I'm going to keep as much distance between me and Lane as possible.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I had to ask because I saw the pictures.
And that's a lot how my training is going these days, is that I have some flexibility in my work hours. So like usually twice a week, I'll leave work a little bit early and I'll go shoot and then do jiu-jitsu and then come home. And then the other evenings I'll work later to catch up and make sure I'm still on track with what I need to get done.
For classes, what all do you offer?
So I have overall three offerings right now. So I have what I call my core skills class, which would be your like eat your vegetables class. And it is like the prerequisites are that you're not going to shoot anybody, that you have a holster that's safe, you have a gun, you have basic manual of arms on how to load and unload. And we start off with the morning is shooting on a line, and we do like doubles, we do like trigger prep and practical accuracy. So I'm really hard on like teaching people trigger prep, how to do that. We do some target transitions on the line. We do some like bar hop. So just getting people used to like target focus, trigger before sights, predictive and reactive shooting, and with like leading with their eyes on transitions and on bar hop, learning to start disconnecting what their upper body and lower bodies are doing. And then the afternoon doing like moving aggressively with a handgun. So like shooting a target, leaving a position hard, coming into position, shooting another target, and just getting people used to hustling when they have a gun. Like a lot of people are not, they're hesitant to run hard with a handgun. It's like, no, we're not just running hard with scissors here. We're going to run hard with guns, and like, you're going to learn to like it. So do that. And we do some shooting in and out of positions, like how to shoot your way into positions, how to shoot your way out of positions. And then a lot there is based on, it depends on the students and what the overall skill ability is of the students and what we do after that. There may be like somebody's at the class and I have seen them shoot at matches and I have an idea or two like, hey, this would be really good for this person, and everybody else would get out of it, something out of it. So we do that. So that might be like upper range movement with a gun. It may be like finding visual references and moving to those to shoot. Could be throttle control. So having a distance changeup type setup that people are running. I like doing something like distance changeup plus bar hop, like combining those two. Like you have a tight target, you shoot that, you shoot the fast target while you're stepping across the stick, and then you shoot the tight target again. And everything I do in the class is very simple. It's like 3-4 targets, maybe a barrel stack or two. And it's all stuff students can take with them. And there's a lot of dry fire. Like there's a lot of going, like everybody, we dry fire everything first. Then we do live fire, and then we may dry fire it again. The other thing I do on the class is that when everybody gets there, I have a 10 round drill. It's like a mini USPSA stage that I have everybody shoot. And that's something I designed very deliberately to roll up everything we're going to do over the course of the day. So it's a draw. You have two targets that you can shoot while you're rolling out. And then you have to move around the barrel stack, and you have a target you can shoot on the way in. You have a really close burner target, and you have a target that's pretty far out there. So just using that theme of like, you want to tell people what you're going to teach them. You want to teach them, and then you want to tell them what you taught them, is I use that to go over very quickly, like in 2-3 minutes, this is everything we're going to cover for today. And then we go over the things I talked about. Like everything that I do, I'm demoing. And then at the end of the day, we shoot that assessment again. And I'm not so much looking for people to get better on the assessment, because at that point, we're pretty tired. Like I've been running around everybody and we've been doing a lot of shooting, but I'm mostly looking for how, like asking people, when you shot this in the morning, I want you to remember what was going through your head. Like, what's your thinking on how I'm going to shoot this? And then at the end of the day, I want you to tell me what's your mental approach to shooting the stage at the end. And a lot of times in the beginning, people are like, well, I'm just going to load the gun, I'm going to shoot the targets. And that's the level of detail they're planning. And at the end of the day, it's at least we've gotten to some sort of planning on, I want to shoot these targets as I'm rolling out of position. I want to have the gun up early as I come into position, and so on down the line. That's what I'm looking for there.
And then, just something to show progression.
Yeah. And just to show, because if they can walk through mentally what they're doing, that's half of what training is that you're looking at how should I be shooting this? And how do I assess how I'm shooting it now? How do I want to shoot it? And what are some things I can do right now in the moment to start closing that gap?
Okay. So you and I are shooting the same local. Uh-huh. And I come up to you and I'm like, hey, Andreas, I dry fire all the time, but I'm not consistent. I'm going to be next weekend. You know, I'll be dry firing all week. Next weekend, I'm going back to the range. Can you give me a drill that I could do to make myself more consistent in what I'm doing?
I'm not big on telling people drills to shoot. Where are you putting your attention, I think, is more important. And that you're going to figure out, where should I put my attention? And that's going to define the drill. So if your issue is consistency, I would ask more, what's the inconsistency? Are you having a lot of makeups on steel? Are you having trigger freeze? Are you missing reloads? Like what's going on? And then based on that, we could start talking more what you should be doing. So
let's say makeup on steel.
Yeah. So what I would suggest is on something like that is I would ask you to be very aware, like to start off in dry fire, be very aware of what your hands are doing as you pull a trigger. So let's say you're shooting a red dot. So say you want to get the trigger ready, get the dot lined up, and then pull the trigger. And I want you to watch what happens. And if the dot's moving, start feeling, where is this happening in your hands? And that you want to put your, I tell people, you want to keep your grip very even as you're pulling the trigger. And you want to put your brain on the, like the second knuckle of your trigger finger. And you want to pull the trigger straight back to your nose. And to start having them pay attention to that, just doing a single shot. And once I can do that, let's repeat that. But I want you to take a couple steps, bring the gun up, and then come in on that tight shot and fire it. And then for the consistency, what I like doing is now you need to do that 10 times in a row and not have the dot leave the little target as you're pulling the trigger. You got to do it 10 times in a row. And I want you to write it down as you're doing it to start building some stress or building some accountability. So that's something I do at the range pretty regularly, like consistency, particularly like the on steel, last target of the stage, that's an issue. So that's something I set up for myself pretty regularly, both live and dry fire. Like you're going to draw, like set up have a 8-inch plate at 25 yards. You need to draw first round hit on the plate, whatever, 2.5 second par time, 10 times in a row, like make it happen. And I mean, when I'm getting like shot 8, 9, 10, like I can feel the jitters, like same as I would shooting a match when I'm in front of a bunch of people.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Self-induced pressure.
Yeah. Being able to just do that. Yeah. The other two classes I do, one is a match skills class, and I just set up a stage for everybody to work on and just run through a lot of it's. Like the morning is visualization, like how to come up with a stage plan and how to commit it to memory and how to execute it. And I use a lot the analogy of having a deck of cards or a deck of index cards, and you're writing notes and you're flipping through them as you shoot the stage. So just how do you build up that deck of cards? Like what's the first thing you need to do when you get to the stage, and giving people a process. And then the afternoon is more on execution and being efficient. I have people do some push runs to learn what happens when things go off the rails, like where, when they try to go faster, like what holds together, what falls apart. And then, let's do looking at risks, like setting up a stage where you have a risky stage plan, and how much time does it save? And can you make it happen when I give you the buzz? And that's not, those are some principles I can work on in training, but again, run a whole stage. So it's not something you can set up easily.
Right.
And then when I do private training, there'll be some meat in the middle between what the students think they need and what I think they need.
How often does that happen? They think they need something, but really they needed this over here and not what they thought.
I mean, if you were to ask people what they need, it's like, I need to shoot on the move and I need to get better at swingers. And it's more, no, you need to get better at visual precision and pulling the trigger straight back and visual discipline.
You know, I when you said the first options, I was like, well, I don't need to get better on swingers. I probably do need to do more work with shooting while moving, but everything you said in the second option is definitely what I have to work on.
Okay.
That's for sure.
What people need to work on. Yeah, that's instructing. Eventually, you start building a filter between like what they say and what they need.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
You're telling me the outcome. My job, I think one of my jobs as an instructor is like, you want this outcome. Let me give you a process to make that outcome happen. Because you can't. Well, I need to get better at shooting on the move. And it's like, that's not actionable. I mean, you could take you could take a bucket of ammo and just shoot on the move a lot, and eventually you'll figure it out. But I think it's more efficient to, like, if you work on these things, your shooting on the move is going to get better, and a whole lot of other things are going to get better too.
Now you're doing what a lot of people are doing, and you're starting to move away from Instagram and to Twitter or X now. Yeah. But it seems like the audience is still bigger on Instagram. So
100%.
Okay, so you have noticed that the audience over on X is not the same.
Oh, no, it's nowhere near as big.
Okay.
I don't have anywhere near the engagement as I do on Instagram.
I've wanted to move to Twitter, but yeah, it's, for the same reason.
So it's getting better. Like I'm getting a little bit more engagement. I also wanted to do some testing the waters on Twitter before I really ramped up promoting it. I had a whole bunch of stuff that was blocked on Instagram. Like I'd post it and I would immediately say, like, this is blocked. You're not allowed to post this. And there are also shadow banned on Instagram.
And oh, shocker.
On YouTube, most of what I know about Glock triggers, I learned from the Johnny Glock's YouTube page. And like, I bought some of his triggers too. I like them. But there are a lot of videos where and he's not the only one, but he's like, I can't show you how to do this on Instagram. I'm sorry, I can't show you how to do this on YouTube because I'll get blocked. Like details of firearm operation. And so I recently picked up a Zev modular build kit and a Glock upper. And I just showed, like, I took the entire thing apart and put it back together. I did a full assembly of the Glock upper on X. I did like a modular build kit, taking out all the pins, taking the trigger module out, putting all the pins back in, and like no problem. No warnings, no flagging of that. I'm like, yeah, this is good.
Have you considered Rumble?
Well, as a video platform, I think it's good. And I know some other dissident creators who are using Rumble successfully or using Odyssey successfully. There's a lot of text stuff that I want to do as well. And what I like on X is it gives me a way to do both video and text.
Okay.
So I'm going to stick with it for a while. Like on Instagram stories. I mean, there's so many things about Instagram that I think is just not good for what we're doing. Just the way you can share information, how you're limited. Like you can't, like when you watch a video, it's like your phone's locked vertical and you don't have a scrubber. Like you can't skip backwards and forwards. Like everything about the user experience is awful. Like the only thing good about it is the audience. And when I have a video on X or another of these platforms, you get a scrubber, you can do full screen video, you can skip backwards and forwards. It's just, it's so much easier. You can also, you can chain, like on X, you can chain posts together. So if you have like a couple videos, you can just do the first video and then do the second and third as a reply to the first video. So everything chains together.
Yep.
Shows up. You can't do that on Instagram. So yeah, I'm just finding that for what I want to do and the info I want to share, it's not working. Like I think Instagram is great. Like I follow some accounts with like otters and owls and like, yeah, it's great for that. Like just cute videos but for anything instructional, it's just awful.
I agree.
Like there's some jiu-jitsu stuff that I follow and like the video starts playing like, nope, I want to repeat that. And like, you can't.
You have to wait till it ends or go somewhere else and go back.
Yeah.
To start it all over again. Yeah. It's
Or download videos. Like if you're a Linux geek, you can download those videos and just watch them on your own, which is what I
do. Yeah, and I'm not. So I don't know how to get people to move to other platforms because nobody's doing it, but hopefully eventually.
So this has to be terrible. Like I've talked to people who run businesses and there is like in an Instagram post, you can't include a URL.
Correct.
The only way you can include a URL is if you do an Instagram story. So what I've started doing is like doing a screenshot of a video and then putting the URL on the screenshot, like say the video is here.
Yeah, it's definitely a pain and I don't, it's only mobile phone friendly. I do most of my stuff either on a Mac or a PC, but like with everything going on in the USPSA right now, people will post letters that they've written or something.
Nobody can read that shit. Yeah.
I can't read that on my computer. I'm like, no. I've got a big screen. I can't even read it. I have to go to my phone to be able to expand it, to Zoom.
Yeah, I'm on a laptop most of the day or I use my iPad a lot, like my phone. I only use the phone if I'm like, yeah, you like the, you, on an iPad, it makes you run, like they don't even have an iPad app. Like you're running the phone app. So you have like this little vertical thing. It's like using the phone on your iPad. So 2/3 of the screen is black. And then like, if you go on the web browser, as you said, you got this giant, like 11-inch tablet, and you got like a little video that's like a business card in the center, and there's no way to make it bigger. Instagram, like Meta, just hates us, and like I've decided to hate them back.
Yeah, I saw that on your. I was like, he's right. They hate us. We should start hating them back. We should.
Yeah,
I 100% agree with that. I do have a podcast Twitter page, but I haven't used it much because I know there isn't a lot going on there. I'm trying to transition more to Rumble, mm-hmm. but even that, you know, the audience is still at YouTube as well. So.
Yeah.
That whole social media thing is difficult.
Yeah.
Now, have you heard about that Livefyre app that Mike Sieglander is?
I wanted to take a look at it. If you go to Livefyre, it says download this app and install it. It's like, I'm not going to install your app just to check this out. Like that's not going to happen. And you have to make an account to take check it out. It's like I'm not sure I want to do that. And what I figure is with, like with Instagram, with X, with Rumble, there's a lot of stuff on there. So people are going to go there for other things. And like saying like, this is the one place you go to for gun content and then you got to go somewhere else for everything else. I don't know if that's a winning proposition. Like I could be wrong. It's very possible that I'm wrong. I mean, I often am. But we'll see.
I like the idea. I love the concept. My only issue is too that it is subscription based.
I mean, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm paying for an X Premium account, and I think it's like $60 or $70 a year, and that's fine. Like, I think the people who hate us, like, they have billionaires that are backing them who are just writing giant checks. And
right.
I mean, if we can't pony up like $60-$70 to not get blocked, I mean, it's like, come on, like buy it's a box of ammo. Come on. And that's really only if you are like posting content. Like you can reply, you can browse on X for free. It doesn't cost anything. It's mostly on the creator end that the features benefit. Like I think you can do 4-hour videos once you pay a couple bucks a month. You have like no limit on the post length, and there's a bunch of other stuff. They're also making one of the tiers, they're adding like a Substack type feature where you can have long form documents and some better organization of your
on X
online. Yeah.
Oh wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, there's a bunch going on. It'll be fun, like when people listen to this podcast in a couple of years
and see where we're at.
See where we're at, yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of a couple of years, thank you for the segue. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Hopefully at that Flanora stage.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully I'll have a lot more free time. I'll say like my dad is turning 80 this weekend and he shoots USPSA with me. So,
wow.
I think I can be at this for a while. Not necessarily at a competitive level, but I think I can still offer the sport a lot in terms of teaching and just helping people out at matches. I think I can do that for quite a while to come. I certainly see myself continuing to shoot and to teach, and I'd like to just ramp up the instructional content that I'm putting out. It's like right now, and we have family in the area. We have like my wife and I like biking, have a bunch of other time commitments. And I don't see traveling to teach. Like maybe somewhere in the Southeast, like a weekend here and there, but the whole traveling instructor gig, I don't see happening. So being able to have some ideas out there that people who are other parts of the country, other parts of the planet can get at. I would really like that. And in terms of shooting, just being able to have more time for content creation, I would like. That's where I would see myself in 5 years. Yeah, still holding it together in matches, but yeah.
Do you have any major goals left in practical shooting?
When I got in, I wanted to make GM and I wanted to win the Georgia State match. And I hit those, so that's good. An area match, I don't see it as being realistic for me. I would say right now I'm more after a stage of execution that I'm after, where like I walk away from a match and I'm like, well, this wasn't perfect. That wasn't perfect. But like overall, that was really good. Like I just like the feeling that I executed a match to my potential. I'd like that to happen more often. Like where like I come into position, like the visual discipline's there. Like I got that deep trigger prep, like hit the 20-yard steel coming in as I settle into position, or like go through a close array without any trick. I'm just relaxed, no trigger freeze, just sub 20 splits on that close array. And just to be able to have that happen on a regular basis at matches, or like 5 out of the 6 stages go like that. And then, or I have a couple stages like, yeah, that reload wasn't great. This wasn't great. That wasn't great, but I can live with it. That's what I'm after now. And whatever results that bring, like, I think that's going to bring solid results. It's not going to win an area match or.
So the last time I had Mason Lane on, I could tell he wasn't having the results that he was hoping for at national level events. And I asked him, I said, how much of that is because his income is instructing.
Yeah.
I said, so how much of your lack of results been due to the fact that you spend all your time teaching and less time able to practice what you need to work on? Have you reached that at all where, okay.
No, I.
Because you have a separate full-time job and then you teach. So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah. I mean, the teaching something now I'm doing maybe twice a month. And my practice is during the week. So they're not really, I wouldn't be practicing on the days that I'm teaching. So I think it's mental discipline, it's working details, it's not a resource or a time thing at this point. I think it's quality reps, it's just the ingraining some more patterns. I think it's more, I think some of it is the better I've gotten at shooting, the more I realize all the mistakes that I'm making. And I just feel like I'm so much better tuned in to everything that's going on as I shoot. And even when the stage is going reasonably well, it feels like a train wreck because I can feel everything that's different than how I want it to be. And I think there's also the expectations, like, because I'm training live twice a week for like an hour and a half or so. And then I'm dry firing during lunch. And like, yeah, why did you punch that no shoot on the first target of the stage or something like that? It's like my own worst enemy there.
Right. Contrary to everything you do.
Yeah. The relaxing, just letting it happen, taking away some of the expectations. Yeah.
Have you seen anything on social media about the Ace virtual reality system?
Oh, how could you not?
Have you been able to put hands on it at all?
No, I would like to. I just thinking about it and having used VR systems, I think it has some problems. I know that for what I'm working on, I don't think it would be that helpful.
What about though teaching newer shooters who have more to learn?
I think there's a place for it. Absolutely. I think a lot of the, I would want to try it or talk to people who spend some more time on it to see what sort of bad habits it instills. Like the, biggest issue, one of the biggest issues I see with it is that everything is at a single focal depth. And so much of shooting, I think, is visual precision and controlling the depth that your eyes are focusing at, like to stay on the target and not get sucked into the sights, not get sucked into the dot. If everything is in a single plane, like how does that work? And I just don't, I see some problems there. It's like if you, when I've gone to 3D movies, what drives me nuts on the few I've seen is the in focus and out of focus areas are set. And you look at the screen and it's telling you what's in focus and what's out of focus. And if you want to visually explore other parts of the scene that are out of focus, when you look at them, they're still out of focus.
Right. So your concern is the depth perception.
Yeah. And I don't see that as insurmountable. I mean, there are eye tracking systems, like these things, like the Apple headset has eye tracking built in. So you can imagine it could figure out the parallax of your eyes and adjust focus accordingly.
Whew.
So I think it could be doable.
I will say that I did get a chance to play with it for about 10 minutes, but with no pressure because there weren't other people around. Fine. Well, I was actually very impressed with, because look, I was like, oh, you know, when I first picked it up, I was like, oh, this is cool. But in my mind, I'm like, oh, it's Wii, you know, the old handheld little console game. And, you know, put the virtual headset on and I'm holding the controller, which is shaped like a pistol. And I go to shoot and I'm like, damn, my dot's all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I found that I had to grip that thing as hard as I did a normal pistol to keep my dot from moving all over the place and to be able to shoot. So I was actually very impressed. I totally get the visual depth part. But as for the rest of it, I was very impressed with how accurate it was, like zeroing the gun at different ranges, even though you don't zero it. But at least you see, you can check to see where your gun hits. You know, when you call your shots and you finish a stage, they then show you the hits on the target and you're like, oh, okay, yeah. So it was a very good representation to me. It would be interesting because I had not thought of depth perception in the way that you have described it. So it would be interesting if they could add that.
I mean, like this is version zero. It's not going to be amazing. People like it or people seem to enjoy it. I think that's great. I mean, I hope they make money and that the money goes into addressing some of the technical limitations and making it more realistic. Because at some point I can imagine a version of this that I'd buy. Like, that's going to solve my problems. Cause I just see like my problems in shooting is like the visual, like staying target focused. Also like staying target focused and visually returning the gun as it recoils. And yeah, it's not going to help me with that. So, but people who are trying to come up with stage plans, trying to maneuver through stages, trying to remember all their targets. I mean, a lot of those things, it's going to help. So I can, as you said, I can imagine a large number of shooters for whom this is going to be valuable training.
Yeah, it's not going to make Mason Lane not going to add another national championship title for him. You know,
like teaching people to remember their way through a stage, teaching people to lead with their eyes. A lot of these things, it's going to be able to do, and I think that's great.
Yeah, they even had a stage where I watched Noah Senta, who is the marketing director, have to do low ports and other things, you know, virtually. It was very, very interesting. I see a lot of positives. And the biggest thing I saw to me was, because, you know, I've had not only yourself, but again, Mason, Tim Heron, Mike Sieglander, all those guys on here, man, what a great tool that is for virtual training, because you can log on and see what the person is actually doing. Mm-hmm. So you can see if they're, you know, following the dot, staring at their dot, you know, not gripping the gun right, whatever it is. I mean, those are things that can be corrected through virtual training to help people get better as well.
Oh, you can imagine with a gun, like how you could instrument that in the future. Like if you have like pressure sensors on the gun for how the person's gripping it, that could be really useful. Like you could start diagnosing how they're pulling the trigger, like when they're pulling the trigger sideways or how they're torquing the gun as they pull the trigger, like if they're not isolating the trigger finger well. I mean, there's tons you could do with it, where you could take it.
It'll be interesting because I'm a member of one of the Facebook groups and people are 3D printing all kinds of different guns. Mm-hmm. I saw what an open gun just yesterday that people are 3D printing, you know, they're silicone carbiding the grips. They're doing all this different stuff. And I'm like, wait until they come out with one for a carbine, because then it's just gonna add another, you know, device that people can train with. But I think the opportunities are endless, but it'll be interesting with some of the things that you're talking about from an engineering standpoint.
Getting some recoil in there, whether they do it like because I looked at getting one of the cool fire trainers just to work trigger reset and visual return. And yeah, the pricing on that adds up pretty quickly. Like you're buying compression equipment. And
it does.
The guns get cold. So yeah, you probably need two guns. Like you have one that you shoot and the other one that you're like putting it in an oven to warm it back up.
And it's funny you say that because I borrowed a buddy of mine's cool fire trainer and I liked it, but I felt that it got too cold too quick.
Yeah. That's just physics, man.
But so at SHOT Show, mm-hmm. they had a system for the AR, and that is way better in my mind because you can go like 80 or 85 shots in a magazine.
Yeah.
Before you have to recharge it and it doesn't get cold. Like you can shoot it as fast as you want for the entire 80, 85 rounds, you know, the simulated trigger pulls, and it won't get cold and slow down like the cool fires do on the pistol. Yeah. It's supposed to be, they had a unit there, like what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And demoed it. I got to shoot it. Nice little recoil. Everything looked awesome on it. Again, you don't have the same sluggish return as it gets colder.
Yeah. Technology doesn't usually regress. So we'll,
let's hope not anyway.
That's another podcast.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. I don't know that that's in my wheelhouse, but that would be a fun conversation. Well, Andreas, that's everything I wanted to talk about with you. Was there anything else that we talked about that you felt we needed to go back on?
No, this was great. Covered, I had a bunch of mental notes that I wanted to talk about, and your preparation was great. So, yeah.
Thank you for coming on. It was absolutely a fantastic conversation.
We'll see if your audience agrees.
We'll have to do this again sometime.
Yeah, that would be fun. Maybe after the next summit or something.
Until next time,
don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.